You said, Esther, that you've been looking into the historical roots of this. What have you found, important factors that make our way of dealing with it what it is?
Well, what's kind of interesting in terms of history that links into Great Britain is just when we were becoming a new country was the point at which in England they would talk about it as the era of the Bloody Code. So that in England, they had increasingly used the death penalty for felonies. That includes, of course, serious ones, obviously murder, highway robbery, and so forth. But it also included all property theft. So that, I mean, they often would say if you robbed your mistress of her linen handkerchief, you could be executed. And indeed, in England, there were a high number of executions. So this was just at the time that in this country, we were just beginning to develop our system. There was a real movement against the Bloody Code. But the argument that developed on the continent and in England was that it would actually be a much more serious punishment to imprison people, and it was likened directly as a civil death. In other words, the use of slavery rather than death as a punishment for crime. So in this country, with the development of a new system, but still out of the British, we were the people who really developed the penal system as a substitute for death. Now, we retained capital punishment, but limited it pretty much to murder and so forth. And by the way, this is where the Quakers came in. Now, most of the movement was economic, but the Quakers also pushed for a particular kind of imprisonment, which was solitary confinement, with the belief that it could indeed, as a person reflected on their crimes, it could be the opportunity for spiritual transformation. So while they certainly were not the key people responsible for the penal system, the particular kind of penal system that's associated with the Quakers, which was solitary confinement, came about. At the same time, we had in the United States slavery, not penal slavery, but slavery based on race. And we had at the same time the development of, I guess you'd call it the Industrial Revolution. I'm moving into these first periods when we were developing industrial prisons. And we also, so that whole sense of human beings as commodities. So we had an interweaving in the United States, you know, when we're trying to figure out how we have this so heavily, is we had the mixture of shifting to the penal system, having the sense that the state can commit someone to, and the term that's used is civil death. In other words, you're no longer physically dead, but you're civilly dead. You have lost your rights. You also had a country that had slavery, as opposed to Europe, which had pretty much moved out of it, which could see human beings as commodities. And then you had a strong patriarchal structure, which, you know, linked into women's imprisonment. And all of these it's like having a whole set of dots. Then, to bring up the theological one, you have a strange situation, and this is a paradox, that in England you had an established church, but because you had an established church, you had a deep awareness of the difference between ecclesiastical life and the state. So there was kind of an understanding that morality, that whole area, was a function of the church. When we came to the United States, many of our, particularly in New England, you had, with your Presbyterians and so forth, the image that the state or the magistrate became the voice of God. So it's a paradox that supposedly we had a separation of church and state, but there is a sense in which what happened is we absorbed the church into the state, and the state became the sort of moral arbitrator